Mr. Still, I've got a question. It's about some creative chaos that you've given to me. I appreciate what you say, and it stood the test of experience and time. This morning I was thrilled and thrilled again now, but I'm a bit in a difficulty. I understand that there are principles in what we've been saying today that can be applied in most, if not all, situations. But I find myself in a situation where simplicity is a principle that almost difficult, if not impossible, to work out in terms of not having cycle clubs. Well, you don't have a cycle club, but it might be a badminton club.
By simplicity, you don't mean simplicity in preaching, because that of all things is what you need to fill.
Congregational life,
yes.
And the like. And programs, too, you referred to programs about evangelism, and you said it should naturally flow.
You should explain that you are in a church extension charge.
Yes, I know that.
No, I know. It's not to you, but to all these who don't know who this is.
Yes, yes it is. I think if I were in some of your places, I would do pretty much what you are doing, but I would have my eye. This is what Eric Allegrant said to me long ago. He said, I don't know how long it would take me. But he says, I seek where I want to go. And the same as I wanted to go. If that hasn't come across, I suppose it hasn't in a way, but I've spoken this before. That's not to say that everything you do is necessarily what I would do in your circumstances, but generally, all sorts of things would have to be tolerated. I said, better to see things fade out than be pushed out. That's very, very important. Very important. And we don't want bulls in china shops, really. But, in a sense, all I'm saying, do you see the end? Goal was the word that I gave myself. Do you see the end? Is that your end, or is it not your end? Are you content with the social church, social congregation? Because it'll get nowhere except entertainment to your people. That's all. Is that okay?
Mr. Still, I feel encouraged, but immensely depressed.
All right. Give me my garbage off.
I'm not going to quibble with him.
No.
I feel depressed a little about the musical comments that you made, partly because I don't have the musical talent or insight that you have, but also because I recognize that within our situation, and part of what we've been doing over the last 12 months is to develop the music in the church. And I should say perhaps to you, partly at your suggestion some years ago, that we should have a service. We have tried to develop the music a little using Graham Kendrick songs and modern songs and instruments, because I became very conscious during morning worship that many of the hymns we were singing from CH3 were not only meaningless to the people singing them, but even to myself, hard to understand. And although I accept pretty well everything you said this afternoon, when you started to encroach on that ground,
yes.
I felt very depressed. I spent the last 12 months
trying to
develop that area so that people do understand what they're saying.
I'm very sorry, Peter, and if others have felt depressed, I'm very, very sorry, Bert, but I'm saying to you exactly what I said to him, you see, really. Because I was only about a month in Gilcomston when we ordered 800 redemption songbooks, and we sang those on Sunday evenings for years. Some of the rantiest ones too, that I hated when Gordon Ross loved. But if your aim is to educate, you see now, after all these years, we choose the solidest hymns in the book and the finest tunes. But it's taken all these years. All I'm saying is, do you see where you're going? You do.
I'm not going to go back, only backwards, in for music and worship, which is where we have to go if we use CH3. I'll take the best of what is modern as well.
Yes, yes.
And some of the modern best is fine and far better than what's in here.
It will have nothing to do with that three thing.
That's what we have, you see.
You see, something you should have done.
Yes,
something you should have done, which we did. When I fought in the local committee over the hymn book, and I said to the St. Michael's Oracle, St. Cathedral Ordinance, I said, look here, if you go ahead with that and take about 100 hymns out of that hymn book that I need Sunday by Sunday, we'll just go and buy one or two extra sets of books, and we'll keep them certainly as long as I'm alive. And we've still got some in store of the revised hymnary, and we never touch it. There are one or two tunes that we've used there, but any of the new hymns are. Bob, was it?
Yes. First of all, Mr. Stowe, can I make a comment and then a question? First of all, to go back to this morning, and I must say I was greatly heartened, first of all, by what Jim had to say, and then secondly by George. Now, I felt particularly in George's address that he'd readdressed the balance, because there were two words that were coming through to me yesterday that made me rather sad, and the two words were secession and infiltration. And I'm glad that it was very strongly emphasized this morning, because many of us do love the Church of our Fathers. Many of us thank God for all that's happening in these days. There are some of us who have no thought whatsoever of ever going out of our church, but to stay within and to bear our witness within. The word infiltration has also been used. And I think wrongly, because this is our church, it's the Lord's church, and it's our church. And therefore, for us as a people to think of infiltrating, we don't have to infiltrate our church. I would say, and I wonder, and I put this challenge to all the brothers of the Church of Scotland who are here. In the September mailing, each of us received a communication from the convener of the nomination committee, inviting us all to put forward names of ministers, elders, members of the church with their varied talents, so that when the nomination committee meets in a fortnight's time, it can give due consideration. When conveners are present, as well as nomination committee members are present, as to those who should serve on the assembly committees of the church. Now that to me is not infiltration. The church is giving that offer. And I'm sure it would be an interesting exercise among the brethren here to know how many took the time before the end of November to submit the names of evangelical ministers, elders and laymen whom they know, with the varied gifts and talents that they have, to go in and play their part within the life of the church. Because as I've said here before, it is too late at times when policies have been formed elsewhere and decisions then come through our letterbox. And therefore, I would hope that we would see that within the church, that we are not here to infiltrate, but we as evangelicals have the opportunity to bear our witness and our testimony. And after all, when we took our vows of ordination, we vowed to the Lord and his church that we would play our parts in the courts of the church. And therefore I agree with what Donald MacLeod said about that. And for us, as it were, to think very much on a local or on a parish level and say, I'll get on with the parish work, and that's that. If everyone did that, then we would not be the national church that we are, with the influence that we have in spheres not only in Scotland but beyond its shores. And in the light of that, and in the light of what you said yourself today, Mr. Still, that the social outreach should be done by laymen and laywomen, then Frank and I were talking earlier this afternoon, and we certainly would be very glad to learn from ministers or elders who are here of Christian social workers who worship within their congregations. Because we see, and that's where again the opportunity should be there, as we have the opportunity to nominate in the General Assembly committees of the church, that we see to it that Christian social workers, and especially those who are our own standing theologically, are in the places where then they can bring their expertise to the work of the church, and in that sense reaching out. My one question is to yourself, sir, and that concerns your goal. You mentioned that when you went in and walked around with the vacancy committee in Gilkinson South, you thanked God that it was only a very small hall. What I'm asking you is this. The goal to which you yourself are striving, was that goal there from 1945? Was that clear goal there from 1945? Or was there a temporary goal, and then a little further along the road, another goal, as it were, came into focus? Because I'm thinking of many men here in their first child, in the first few years. And that's why I'm asking the question. Was the goal there, that goal there from the beginning? Or were you somewhere along the road when perhaps a more clear goal came into focus?
Yes and no. I don't want to forget the earlier discussion on the word infiltrate. I must have seen this goal before I thought that about the church hall. You see? I must have seen that. Because I was brought up in the Salvation Army where, you know, the activity was very full and varied. I must have seen that, but of course there was a change. I went there June 45, and Billy Graham came with the Youth for Christ people March 46. We started Youth for Christ, and the first 18 months of Gilkinson was wildly evangelistic. Not only redemption hymns and Sunday evenings and all that sort of thing, but lurid preaching and a lot about hell. And Billy Graham said he wouldn't leave Aberdeen. I remember him saying this in the session. I won't leave Aberdeen until you start a Youth for Christ. And we started it in our church, and rallies on Saturday evening, and they went on right through the summer. Of course, I went there just when the war had ended, and it was the most advantageous time that any man could have started his ministry, because everything had closed down in the early 1940s, and people were just looking for something, and they just crowded. They wouldn't do it today. They crowded into Gilkinson, queues and all all that sort of thing. But as 1946 people get accustomed to see to the blackouts going and everything starting up, and toward the autumn of 1946 these rallies petered out, and we tried everything. I took my own Bechstein piano down to the church and had ruined it by taking it down a half tone to fit in with the organ, because the organ was under pitch, and it's never recovered from that really. But it was all so that we might advance the thing with every conceivable gimmick possible. Couldn't you, some of the things, stretching banners across the road, and got us into trouble with the authorities and the church people, and you wouldn't believe some of the things we did. By the autumn of that year, the attendances were falling away, and people, I found that to keep this thing up, I'd have to become an entertainer, and think of ever new ways of attracting. And even then, the contrast between Saturday evening and the rally and Sunday, I'd begun to teach the word systematically, very tentatively, because I wanted to give them the elements of the gospel, and I gave them the first 8 chapters of Romans, one after the other, and this interested the people, and so we went on. And the difference between Saturday night and Sunday night, the grip of the word on Sunday evening, the Lord said to me so plainly, this is your work. This is what's going to do the work. This is going to grip the people. This is going to change the people. And so at the beginning of 1946, we started daily Bible reading notes, which have gone on all ever since, and Bible teaching ministry. And within a week or two, a vast number of our evangelistic people who crowded from our mission halls and other places and to our late service on Sunday evening just vamooshed, and we've had a comparatively small congregations ever since. But that's what's done the work. Yes, there was that change, but I'm sure that I saw the significance of the small church hall from the beginning. Back to the infiltration. I think you are opposing things that are not opposed. I stand. There would be none to respond to what you say. From an evangelical point of view, if we hadn't been infiltrating for the last 40 years and more, that's what we've been doing. You may not like the word, but it's been quiet going into parishes and building up the nucleus of believers. That's the work. Most of the people, older men here, that's what they've done. You may not like the word, but I agree with you with the other, and I agree with Donald MacLeod, and I agree with George Philip in particular about the need to get into the courts of the church and into the committees. Absolutely. It seems to me, is how the thing began.
Mr. Still, would permeate not be a better word? Well, something that,
oh yes,
something,
yes,
that infiltrates, comes in from outside. But if we are one church, one denomination, one body, that which permeates is already there, but it's all in the one place.
Yes,
and
yes,
it needs to spread out.
Yes. But it's easy to see that now.
Howard Taylor.
Yes, well, I was wanting to ask a question about, on a different subject, if that's all right. It's not specifically from this present talk, but something generally throughout the conference. I've heard references, as we have often in conferences, from speakers and contributors to was things like when I went to my church, my first charge, I found that there were two Christians in the church and one elder was a Christian. Now I wonder, my question is it wise to be so hasty in our judgment?
Yes.
And how do we make these judgments in any case? In my own limited experience, both in Africa and here, people of the same all over the world, those who throw themselves at you using the language of Zion are not necessarily the ones who show the fruit of faith in the end. And those who are quiet and haven't learnt the language of Zion turn out to be the ones who are the real believers
in Amen.
And respond in faith. And I think this is a very serious point.
Yes.
We speak about that now.
Oh, I agree absolutely. I thought that that was too definite and too low an estimate. I would wonder if there is any congregation in the Church of Scotland where there is not at least one regenerate person there. Some people are regenerate and because they've never been taught or nurtured, they scarcely know it. And it's beautiful to see somebody. Lots of you here have this experience of seeing people who make no profession because they wouldn't be very sure whether they're a Christian, are opening like flowers to the sun at the word. And maybe they were regenerate long before you ever saw them.
Yes, that's important.
So that being the case, I think another question follows on from that, and it relates very much to your chapter talk a few moments ago. Given that we are to concentrate on the one thing that we're called to do, which I think you've made very clear, and we've seen the fruits of it in the three ministries that have been represented on the floor today, do we not underestimate the Christian character and commitments of those who are involved in organizations? We know what these organizations might be within the church. And also the possibility not of getting rid of these organizations altogether in God's will, but in transforming, not all of them, for some may have to go, but at least one or two of them, so that they become thoroughly Christian. And it is then God's will that they vanish into the family, as it were, so be it. But I think the same point coming on from what Howard is saying is, do we underestimate the potential of organizations first as bridge builders into the community and bringing people into the church who otherwise might not come, and secondly, in transforming them so that they become thoroughly Christian? And I think of one organization within my church, I can't speak of all of them in this way, which God is using to bring a word to elderly people, large numbers, about 100 on a regular basis.
I would say that that may obtain in churches according to the minister's mind and the Kirk Session's mind, congregation's mind, might obtain permanently. And what's wrong with that if there are Christians, who are really Christian boys brigade office bears, you see, sort of thing. But I would think that in many churches that would be an intermediate stage, and there would be a stage beyond that when even these things. Now, what am I trying to say? I've said this, and let me repeat it. The danger is, you see, that other things take over. Anything that starts up as a congregational thing, whatever it is, tick, 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 tick your cycle club.
Och, Dick the Gill, that's a move.
It may be perfectly Christian, all that for a time, but a kind of an auxiliary thing. But by the next generation, it belongs, and oh, we must have it. You see, I said a year or two ago to our congregation, we have a Christmas party. And we clear away the chairs in the church building, the church itself, carpeted. And we have our meal there in the church. And then some games and things in the church hall after that. And a year or two ago, I thought that they were becoming a bit keen on it, and I suggested... I suggested from the pulpit that we might be better without that, because we must, and at the point when we say, oh, we must, I said, no, we must not, but we may. And you can have it for a year or two if you see if you behave yourself. But I do see what you say. But again, I'm saying is long term. But yes, and I haven't said what I meant to say. The goal is this, that our kind of church. Now, all sorts of things go on around our church. I hope all of them legitimate. But a year or two ago, Alan Masson said to me, will you mention our, what was it, some kind of picnic, a ramble. Will you mention it from the pulpit? I said, now, Alan, listen to me. By a year or two, that will belong to the Constitution of Gilcomston. No, I won't mention it. Go on with your ramble, but don't tell me. Do you see the point?
Yes, you used the word intermediate stage, which I thought was going to be helpful. The possibility of a Christian woman's guild. reaching out to the community and making it possible for some women folk to come in and so on. That would be an intermediate thing, but the ultimate stage is if the guild dies.
I didn't say that.
No, but I'm clarifying your position.
Sure. Radically with that last statement, if it hadn't been for the fact that so many evangelically minded women and so many evangelical ministers' wives, if they had not abandoned the woman's guild, the whole concept, the whole thing that we could almost sum up as a motherhood of God thing, would never have reached the pitch that it reached. It is interesting now that at the leadership of the Women's Guild, there are those who stand four square with our theological position and with our spiritual objectives, and you get women converted in the Women's Guild, and you get backsliders restored through the Women's Guild. And I think it's an unwise... I know that there are women's guilds that are... I must choose my words carefully.
You better.
But I sat at women's guild concerts with concert parties from other churches and with the leaders of these concert parties telling blue jokes and all that kind of thing. The Women's Guild in our place now, I regard as a significant spiritual part of my ministry. And if one of the things that I've always felt strongly about is that if we're going to fight battles for the gospel's sake, we've got to fight them in the right places. And one of the things that we've done unwisely, I think,
has been a total abandonment of any thought of influence for Christ and for the gospel among the women of the church. And I think this is one of the reasons why we have landed with such a problem with regard to the woman eldership business and all that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, now, that was, it was you, Tatey, that brought up the Women's Guild, so I'm not taking that. But, George, after all,
yes,
you know...
Yes, come on, but, George...
after all, you've only been 31 years and so...
Come on.
If it pleases you, Mr. Starr, we very value in your reaction to taking that thought a stage further, namely the possible permanence of a Christian guild, and I would address it to the church in a hurting community and its response to that community's needs. At the time when I was praying whether we consider having a social worker within our congregation, she was already a local social worker but appointed to our congregation full-time, I read some discussion within the OMF magazine about whether there should be places like Mannerham Hospital. And I think it was Dr. John Townsend who actually made the point that Christians seeing need just want the flexibility from time to time to respond to that need positively. I think of Robert Galbraith building a church in South America by the preaching of the word and by prayer, but when drug addicts came in, he gave time and attention to what was essentially their social needs. I think of Frank Gibson's work and the response to the alcoholism problem and the fact that the Church of Scotland is listened to in a way that, according to Free Church men, the Free Church isn't, because we are actually doing positive work in this area. And I know for a fact that when we appointed a woman in faith, because I couldn't be a social worker and I wanted to be given to the word and prayer, and there were dreadful needs in the thousands of houses round about us, I know for a fact that our reputation, the Jesus reputation locally, and the relationships locally have been furthered by our simply wanting to respond to local needs by giving someone to that work. I don't think that that is necessarily a temporary solution if Broomhouse is indefinitely a hurting area, and it certainly is a reformed solution. Calvin's Geneva was a series of attempts to make a Christian city, and not only a Christian family within a secular city. And I think I want to take, I would love to hear your thoughts on, could there be, as well as this vision of the church being a family, the flexible possibility of responses to hurts that we see in the area that we're set among?
Oh, absolutely.
Before you reply, I wonder if I could...
Yes, go on.
This is why I associate myself entirely with what George has said. I feel very hurt when I hear people almost dispose of the Women's Guild in the way I thought my dear friend said in it a few moments ago. I had the pleasure of going throughout the country and being in many Women's Guilds with a sense of worship and undoubtedly the dedication to Jesus Christ as good as in any group, including this one. And I just have to say that. Secondly, it may be all right, Mr. Stuhl, for a preacher to do without the church hall. If we're dealing only with the ministry of the minister, what you're saying is entirely appropriate. But it seems to me, as I go through the New Testament, I read about the diaconia, which is an essential part of the ministry of the church. And I think Peter is in fact saying the diaconia need their place. And that place may be the church hall, or it may be some other kind of social service provision. And so I would urge us not to make what I think is a false dichotomy between the preaching of the word and the preparation for it and the bringing of men and women to faith in Jesus Christ and the service of the people. These things are, one is not to be regarded as a distraction. Indeed, I had great privilege in preaching nowhere else than in Holyrood Abbey on Sunday on Acts chapter 20. An emphasis has been made of the great encouragement of Paul and then that great work, I commend you, to the words of his grace, which is able to build you up and to give you the help to all the people sanctified. Now his last words were not those. His last words were these: I covet no man's silver or gold for the heresy, but it's because my father worked in the steel work, as did many of my uncles and all the others. And when the industrial chaplain came in, then there was a tendency for the ordinary Christian to stop witnessing as had been done before. The expert was now here. So I agree with you. Bristol, in the department of which I have a responsibility, the church, we have 1,250 workers, only one of whom is a minister. And that's myself. That's about the right proportion for all the departments. But let's hold the diakonia together with what would be the strength of the
Lord. Yes, I don't see any dichotomy at all. I agree absolutely, I think, with everything you've said. I did speak about another room, you see. I did say that. And I was thinking of all sorts of things. Now, here's an example. And I was challenged about this. When did you speak to... Was it in your record, Jim? When did I hear about... I read out of your record at prayer on Saturday night about your new caring thing for the... Give me the expression. Yes, that's not expression. What expression did you use? What do you call it? That's right. I was so thrilled at that I read it out at prayer on Saturday night and said that it was wonderful. That is a use of a church hall that I think could go on and on and on and on and on. Are you pleased now? Yes, sir. What are you going to say? I'm feared at this man.
I was feared at you. I felt rather like Peter to start with, and it wasn't just 12 months, it was 18 years that I felt I might have wasted. But the point I want to make is that you have agreed now that there may be some organizations to meet the social needs on a long-term goal basis. I suggest that there may also be a long-term need for a bridge leading into the church as well as that leading out of it. And I'm talking in terms of evangelism, that such is the step between the world and the church. It is so big that I think we do need some step in that bridging process, and these may have to be more bridges as time develops and the world and the church are even more divorced unless there is a real divide. Would you agree to the necessity to consider bridges into the church as well as activities?
Depends what you mean by bridges. Anything that would divert from the challenge of individual Christians to evangelize by witness where they live, where they work, I would think would be a pity, because it seems to me that this is the danger of all organized evangelism, that it tends to restrict those involved in it to the organized activity, or would tend to minimize that prime, and I'm sure you agree with this, prime responsibility to evangelize by life and witness and testimony to where people are. What do you mean by bridges, mister?
Take an example. A youth club, where the young people are not in any meaningful contact with Christians, and that because of a great social divide, and therefore there may have to be the use of a secular youth club in order to bring them into the position where the Christian young people can witness.
That is very much covered by what I said to you. Of course, of course, of course. Hey?
In any comfort to Stephen Anderson, I have got three such clubs. And the activities, the people who come to them are all youngsters, right up past their teens and into their early 20s, and they and their families have no other contact with the church at all. Each of the three clubs is staffed by people who are at the prayer meeting every Saturday evening without fail, and each evening, not with an epilogue at the end, but bang in the middle, everything stops, and there is Bible study, and it is really a form of expository ministry. And they keep on coming. Some of the lads in the club, one has actually got married, but he's still coming to the boys' club. And they love it. They have a great regard for their Christian leaders. They love the Bible study. They're learning to know their Bibles, but so far, none of them have come to faith.
Gordon Palmer. Well, we'll wait for 40 years and see what happens then.
I think really what I was going to ask was really covered by what Stephen's second question.
Pursue the matter. Here's Nigel.
Thank you. I wonder whether I might make a comment. It may be helpful, it may not, but it explains my own understanding of these things, which is substantially in line with what you were saying, but which also allows, as indeed you allow, for some of the other things being said. And that is that I think there's no contradiction here. The balance is between is within a view of the church which regards the church being itself subsisting as the worshipping family of God, but then using these other structures, and the both bridge building structures from the guild through youth clubs and so on, and also using interdenominational structures, and that of course doesn't come up, but I mean this is a whole big area, the way in which interdenominational organizations have taken over the role of the church in so many ways, but using these structures when they are being used appropriately for essentially mission purposes, and to understand this in missiological terms. And I think increasingly, as Stephen has said, as the Christian culture declines in the world outside, and as we find ourselves engaging in cross-cultural evangelism, which in this country is more and more in the terms which we understand in other countries, then I think these bridge-building structures, either out from the church or using agencies outside of the church itself, are going to become more and more necessary. But the problem is, these structures then challenge the church and seek to claim for themselves to be part of the church itself, as it subsists, as the worshiping community. Now this seems to me to be the problem, and I think there's no way out ultimately of living with the problem, and in every generation fighting afresh to maintain a view of the church as subsisting in itself as a worshipping family, and are using these structures, but ensuring that they are not themselves able to claim that they are the church. Now I think this is the problem, and I think I wholeheartedly agree with what Mr. Still has said and his view, while at the same time taking a very high view of some of these essentially mission structures which can be used but must be kept in their place.
Could I ask you something, Andy?
Yes, great.
It's about spontaneity, Mr. Still.
I love you very much, and I've known you for how many years? 15 years. And I think you're a very spontaneous person. And I'm not sure whether we all are. And I think that there's an unfortunate tension in some of the things you see between spontaneity and organisation. And I think there's some of us here who feel a little hurt because we feel that God has called us to train others. And that we can't possibly go about our ministry in a spontaneous way because we believe that it must be organised, because we believe that God has called us to train others to do a lot of the things that we feel we do not need to do. Some of us also, like my good friend Mike Frew, I have to say I'm a pastor, but pastor, it's a great privilege to have Mike and his family in our congregation. I think that we should honour people like Mike who have taken up a ministry that none of us would like, and travelling around Scotland and Shetland and all kinds of other lands, with the same conviction that evangelism doesn't just happen spontaneously. In my 12 years of ministry, evangelism has not happened spontaneously from my ministry, but through a concerted desire to teach the people about it and to train them a little. And when I can't do it, to invite others in, like Mike or the people from St. Ninian's, they help us to be trained in this area. So I want to say spontaneity may be the way for some of us, because we are naturally spontaneous. Others, like me, are more pedantic. We need to have a plan. We need to have a structure, an organisation to the way we conduct our ministry. That's the way we organise our goals. Now, is that or is that not something that is true? And is it not the case that we don't need to set up a polarity between what we call spontaneity and what others would call organisation?
What do you mean by spontaneity?
Can you tell us what you mean by it? Because you use the word so often.
only once or twice, but you preach and teach the word.
But you see, some of us would see that goes on in other situations apart from the pulpit ministry, right?
Oh, yes. I'm not concerned.
It would be unfortunate if some others who perhaps have not been listening carefully to what you said for a long time, and I can understand your position and respect it, would think that you might in some way be denigrating those who are involved in other than pulpit ministry, and see that their training organisational work is of worth and value. Because I'm sure that many of us do believe that.
Mr. Stoker, I'm only talking about pastors, those that are called to preach and teach the word. And that, I believe, with all my heart, produces all the rest, including leaders. It can take a long, long time.
Because I'm sure that many of us do believe that.
Mr. Stoker,
I'm only talking about pastors, those that are called to preach and teach the word. And that, I believe, with all my heart, produces all the rest, including leaders. It can take a long, long time, Graham. Of course it can. A long, long time. But after 43 and a half years, we have so many gifted leaders that are involved in all sorts of outreach and all sorts of work, that I never need to look over my shoulder at any. I can trust them all to go on and on. And the only time they would ever discuss anything with me is if there's any problem or question.
And it's nothing but the ministry of the word that has done that. Nothing.
I don't think there's any incompatibility in what you're saying. When I was in Aberdeen just for a brief period, I was concerned to teach people so that there would be that primary evangelism which I'd learned from you. And I was concerned that people should, in their homes and at work and all the rest of it, witness to Christ. And I accept what you say, that churches grow primarily in that way, and that most people who have come to faith have come to faith through the influence of Christian friends and so on. But I wanted also to recognize the fact that I was a parish minister, and that there were 2,000 homes in my parish, and many of those homes had no contact whatsoever with a Christian, and that many of the people who were members of my congregation perhaps lived outside the parish and were witnessing there. But there were a significant number of homes within the parish who would never have met a Christian believer were it not for some organized form of parish visitation in an evangelistic way. And so we planned for 18 months. We put a gospel in every one of these 2,000 homes. We brought up a UCCF campaign team to go out along with our own members, one with one together, to visit 2,000 homes to speak not about the church but about Christ. And so whereas I'm fully committed to the principle of primary evangelism, I feel that organized evangelism is not incompatible with that. And if we are to be faithful to our calling as parish ministers, it's essential.
Yes. Well, and I fully appreciate that, Andy. We have gone through our parishes, mostly businesses, and there might not be more than 40 or 50 domestic homes in the whole parish, you see. And the last time we went round them here or two ago, I said, look here, we're going to go round the businesses. And so the last two Christmases we've gone round, and once in between we've gone round and visited all the businesses and found out how many employees there were, because they're working in our parish, you see, and made contact with them that way. So that's part of the work. So I agree with that, Andy.
Mr. Still, can I think it's dreadful, you know, to be put on the spot. Nobody ever says anything in appreciation. You know, it's always a question. I just want to say that I appreciate what you said today, and George too, this morning, to give me the encouragement to me. The encouragement to hear of the past, you know, what George has had to go through. I don't know how many of us knew some of the things that George had to go through in the ministry. Things you had to put up with to get where you are today. And also, not just moving back, but looking forward, to realise that we can have goals that are in our parishes that are quite out of the question at the moment, or for the next 10 years, or 40 years maybe. But to have goals, and I think that's a great encouragement to me. And I think I'll probably speak for many who haven't stood up to say that, but just to show up my appreciation to you and to George and Jim.
You're very kind. I would just say this last word about that. If you could see ahead to the next generation, the next minister or ministry, think what might develop from what you're doing,
and have a long, long, long view. That's important. That's not so easy, perhaps. For, I suppose it's as you get older that you can look. Am I? Is that too paradoxical? I think it's as you get older you can look not only look back further, but look forward further. And I'm looking far beyond my day to what some of your children may do for the Lord. And seeing, my burden is the I learned this from the Old Testament, the perpetuation of the church from generation to generation. The Old Testament speaks about unto 1,000 generations, and it also speaks of unto all generations. And Israel, for all her faults and all her captivities and all the rest of it, went on from generation to generation, and the fathers taught the children and the children's children and that sort of thing. And I want to see that, the perpetuation of the church. And to avoid all the dangers that the church becomes. You see, the fact that we've had to arise, the Lord has raised us poor things in a day when the church was in a dreadful state, was because it has largely become a social institution. That's the fact. And it's cost some of us the earth. I said yesterday, despite what the professor said about what he saw, and I'm not minimizing at all what it's cost him to witness. But nobody here, not even George or Jim, know what I put up with the first year or two I was in Gilcomston. It would be incredible for you to believe the things that were done, the cost. Sleepless nights, tramping the streets of Aberdeen at 3 a.m, going down and looking at the church and looking at the text board and saying, oh God, I can't go on. But God, you see, it's a cost. And so let's see trends. Let's look back, read your history, recent history, and then look forward and see. It's a great thing you find in the Old Testament, the continuity of Israel through the generations. Old Testament history, so you can't possibly teach the New Testament meaningfully and fruitfully unless you have the whole sweep. Look at my bookie there on, what do you call it? Sweeping through the Old Testament. Devour that and then go and study it more directly from the word itself. See, get a long, long view. It gives character, it gives depth, it gives vision, and it gives hope. Amen. Amen.